Welcome, welcome, welcome to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, I'm a little tired this morning.
Because you were up last night getting ready for National Radio Day today.
Oh, that? I didn't even know it was National Radio Day.
I sprung that one
on you. I learned something new.
What's your favorite radio show of all time?
This show, Studio 2.
That is the correct answer. Okay, continue.
Yes. Well, I was up late watching the Democratic National Convention. Day one. tried to stay up through President Donald. I was like, oh, my goodness. Through President Joe Biden's speech.
Yeah.
You know, I saw the introduction, but then I think I slipped off. But I watched the rest of it this morning, and great speech. Lots of excited people there. And I'm thinking about, you know, Vice President Harris, mm-hmm. the Harris-Waltz ticket.
Mm-hmm.
It's everything is about passing the torch to them. And they've seen this boost at the polls right now. And they're either even with former President Donald Trump and J.D. Vance or winning in many critical states. And so today, the question is, will the Harris poll bump last? And what does she need to do to win?
Hmm.
And we want to hear from you. Call us 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. I've gotten the cobwebs out of my brain because clearly at the beginning I was like, oh my goodness. But
well,
yes.
You were so excited to learn that it was National
Radio Day. National
Radio
Day.
It threw you off. It's very understandable.
I did not know that. Yeah. So, but yeah, Studio
Happy
2 is
National Radio Day. I was really worried you were going to say some other program. So thanks for getting that right.
That's right.
But yeah, the question is, will the Harris poll bump last? What does she need to do to win? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. Email us, studio2@whyy.org. The lines are open, and we have a panel of experts coming your way in the next segment. But first, a trio of local news stories to get to. And we're going to start with a bizarre story from Montgomery County. This is about an anti-Trump Republican who has become, quite literally, a target. The man's name is Matthew McCaffrey. He's a former Marine and a member of the Upper Marion Republican Committee. He also happens to be a vocal anti-Trumper. The county committee is deciding very soon whether to discipline Mr. McCaffrey for openly supporting the Democratic ticket in the upcoming presidential election. They actually could remove him as soon as today. But things really escalated on Friday. McCaffrey went on CNN to explain why he opposes Trump. Here's what he had to say.
Mm-hmm.
My argument is I didn't commit 34 felonies. I haven't disrespected our veterans, and I didn't drag our country through one of the darkest days in American history. So if I broke a bylaw and you want to kick me out for that, that's fine with me.
That was Friday around 4:30. That night, police show up at McCaffrey's house with their guns apparently drawn, and they say they're there because an anonymous tipster said that someone at his address had locked someone in a closet and was threatening to shoot another person. Turns out this was a fake tip. This is all part of a form of harassment known as swatting. And obviously, Mr. McCaffrey thinks this is all retaliation for his anti-Trump views.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, last year, I think there had been dozens of reports by lawmakers to Capitol Police that they had been swatted or had false police reports. I mean, all sorts of stories like that. And I mean, this has been used as an intimidation tactic. And, you know, what's interesting to me is that Matthew McCaffrey could lose his seat because there are rules within the Republican Party that he cannot, he has to only support Republicans. So that's separate from this, you know, intimidation
swatting
attack.
Incident, yeah.
But yeah, it's just very interesting. And it seems like these type of attacks on politicians are continuing.
And he has said to the Inquirer that he's not backing down.
Yeah.
So if they're going to kick him out, they're going to kick him out. He's not resigning.
Wow.
So defiance for Mr. McCaffrey, and like I said, a bizarre incident in Upper Marion, Montgomery County. So now to our next story now.
Yeah, speaking of defiance.
Defiance, national politics, here we go.
Yes, someone notably absent from the Democratic National Convention is Pennsylvania U.S. Senator John Fetterman.
Where is John Fetterman?
Yeah, well, John Fetterman is at home. He's spending some time with his children. And it might not be a bad idea because there's been some drama swirling online around Fetterman. And so let me explain.
Backstory.
The backstory is that the senator, He says he decided a while back before President Biden dropped out of the race to skip the DNC. He wanted to spend these 4 days with his three children because he spends a lot of time in Washington.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand. And, you know, in recent months, you know, Fetterman has been sort of an outcast, you know, in the party because the progressives have sort of pushed him to the side, saying, you know, his staunch support of Israel is a major problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so the drama that has blown up online comes because a member of Fetterman's staff called the Free Press,
which is a publication, yeah,
and went on the record criticizing her boss's pro-Israel stance.
Very unusual.
Very unusual. And let me tell you, Carrie Adams is her name. She serves, at least as of earlier this week, as Fetterman's communications director. And she reached out to the Free Press, told them on the record, quote, "I don't agree with him. I have a sense that his international views are a lot less nuanced than my generation." And she goes on and speaks about that. It's unclear at this point if she still has a job.
Yeah.
Because that is a big no-no. If you work
generally
for your senator
faux pas,
to
yes.
call and say you yes. disagree with him and put your own personal opinions out there, people don't typically do that.
And this was, by the way, in a larger piece
yes.
about Fetterman, right? And
yes.
so she basically calls them back and says,
"Let me let you know.
Like, I personally disagree." Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, and we'll say this, Fetterman's leanings on Israel have clashed with his original image.
Yeah.
You know, he had these shorts, the hoodies, the whole, you know, very progressive guy from Braddock, Pennsylvania, who's for LGBTQ rights and mm-hmm. and increased minimum wage. But now, you know, he sort of, you know, comes across as kind of conservative on this topic and
right.
has been heavily criticized. But he still does support Democrats and has endorsed Vice President Harris.
As a journalist, just selfishly, I don't mind when communications people go
call
rogue.
You up and give you
yeah
some,
sure
some
I mean
quotes.
it's a really fascinating tension to explore. There's obviously a rift within the Democratic Party on this issue, and this exposes it in a mm-hmm. different way. A lot of people were saying basically, you know your role, shut your mouth, and in reference to the mm-hmm. to the person who the communications
I saw
director,
a tweet that said,
I doesn't mind, it doesn't bother me as a journalist. I think the more truth, the more sunlight you shine on anything is fascinating and generally good.
I would have definitely happily answered the phone, but I will say I saw a tweet that said, "Look, Carrie Adams, you had one job."
Yeah.
So you know, we'll see what happens with her. That's an interesting little piece of scuttlebutt going
yep.
on.
People were chatting about mm-hmm. it. People also chatting about cheesesteaks and politics. So J.D. Vance was in Philadelphia yesterday, and he performed the very sacred political ritual of ordering a cheesesteak. So Vance went to Pat's. You know Pat's.
I do.
Okay. Well, mm-hmm. you're upset. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What was that about?
No, I do know Pat's.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay. You don't like Pat's. Got it. And while he was ordering his cheesesteak, he asked a very pointed question, which is to the employee, "Why don't you at Pat's serve your cheesesteak with Swiss cheese as an option?" And that may have been a little barb at John Kerry, because mm-hmm. if you remember, about 20 years ago when John Kerry was running for president, he ordered his cheesesteak with Swiss cheese. Our own Dave Davies actually
exposed that.
That was such
a good political story.
It kind of blew up because it seemed to confirm this preconceived notion of Kerry as an elitist.
And being disconnected from the common man. Yeah,
because they don't do Swiss cheese there.
Mm-hmm.
So Vance did not actually repeat Kerry's mistake. He did order his cheesesteak whiz wit, which means cheese whiz, fried onions. Obama and Bush, they also got whiz. So J.D. Vance maybe was making a joke at John Kerry's expense, or maybe he was just genuinely curious why they don't do it with Swiss cheese. I mean, I don't like Swiss cheese, so it's no big deal to mm-hmm. me. But this was, it was a flashpoint yesterday in local politics. Cheesesteak ordering.
It's so interesting to me. And I felt, I don't know, when I saw the little video mm-hmm. that somebody, I don't know who took that video,
right.
if it was somebody from the Vance campaign, but I just felt like it's always trying too hard. Like, why are you trying to let us know how you order your cheesesteak? I do not care. You know what I mean?
Well, who's trying too hard?
I don't. When the candidates always go to the cheesesteak places
yeah, sure.
and try to, you know, stage those things. And I don't know.
Yeah. How do you get your cheesesteak?
Oh, sharp provolone.
Sharp provolone.
Yeah. Oh, some broccoli rabe.
I'll admit, I do the JD Vance order. I get the Whiz, yeah, the onions.
Whiz is not real cheese.
I know.
I'm
looked
sorry,
down
Whiz
on
is
Whiz
not real
for
cheese.
Years, and then I realized that I was being a snob. And if you actually don't think about what it is, it does.
You definitely
taste
cannot.
Good. It
you
really
cannot,
does.
It's like chemicals.
Just try. You got to be zen. Just block out from your mind what it is. Just try to taste it, and you will realize it tastes good.
Okay.
We also have a great segment coming up all about Kamala Harris's poll
yes.
bump and whether she can maintain it. Email us, studio2@whyy.org. We will be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The Democratic National Convention started last night with speeches from some big headliners like AOC, Raphael Warnock, Hillary Clinton, First Lady Jill Biden, and President Joe Biden. Vice President Harris even made a surprise appearance on stage.
Guided by our love of country, knowing we all have so much more in common than what separates us, let us fight for the ideals we hold dear, and let us always remember, when we fight, we win. God bless you. God bless the United States.
A lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah,
you can hear
enthusiasm.
It there. And going into the convention, the Harris-Walz campaign has indeed made big strides. They now lead in many national polls. The energy and enthusiasm of Democratic voters is palpable. But can Vice President Harris keep it going? As she comes out with more policy ideas, has more interviews, debates former President Trump in the coming weeks, just across the street from us, by the way, mm-hmm. will that enthusiasm hold and will it translate to the votes she needs in November? So that's the big question for our show today. Will the Harris poll bump last? What does she need to do to win? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email us, studio2@whyy.org.
And we have three guests to help us discuss the Harris-Walz campaign and hopefully parse through some of these questions and issues. Joining us in our studio, we have Neil Oxman, a Democratic strategist based here in Philadelphia. Neil, welcome to Studio 2.
Good morning.
Yes, we also have Anthea Butler, the Geraldine R. Siegel Professor in American Social Thought at the University of Pennsylvania and a contributing writer at 2MSNBC Online.
Thank you.
Anthea, welcome back to Studio 2.
Thank you.
Yeah, both of you. And on the line, we have Craig Snyder, who leads the group Haley Voters for Harris. Craig, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks very much.
All right, so I actually wanted to start this segment with a clip. This is a voter that one of our producers talked to on the streets of Philadelphia. This is Katie, who thinks that especially young and female voters are showing up for Kamala Harris. And here's what Katie had to say.
Yeah, I mean, she's under 100 years old, which is clutch. It'd be sick to have a woman. She seems like she can handle Trump. I'm feeling optimistic, and I don't know the last time I felt very optimistic.
So if we rewind about a month ago, mm-hmm. people were talking about these sort of like speculative pre-Biden dropout polls that showed people like Harris not doing much better than him. And we were hearing from lots of people who were saying kind of if Biden drops out, anybody but Harris for all sorts of reasons. So why does that pre-dropout reality not seem to match with what's going on right now? I'll start with you, Anthea Butler.
I think it happened because people were so tired of feeling bad. I mean, all we had were basically two older men, quite frankly, who, and I have nothing against older men, but the thing is that there was so much depression in the air. The RNC looked like they would just totally take over. People were talking about Project 25, and it just seemed like we were about to just slide down into the depths of fascism and despair. And that debate that Biden had really was, at best words, a downer. I could say more, but I'll just say it was a downer. And when she came on board, I think that just changed everything. It opened up a lot of more possibilities. It has that same kind of energy when Obama got through everything, right? You know, and people were there and ready to see him. And I think I really resonate with Katie that that just brought in a whole bunch of young people who weren't there before. And it's obvious that the campaign is running it geared towards people who are more social media savvy, more interested in seeing short clips, more interested in having sound bites about things and TikTok and all of that, as opposed to these long-winded policy kinds of issues.
Yeah.
Neil Oxman, can you jump in on this? Because I'm really fascinated, especially by the polls, because there were all of these polls asking people, again, before Biden dropped out, you know, would you support a Harris, a Gavin Newsom? There were specific names attached.
When you take a poll, and I've seen literally 1,000 in my lifetime, and you put those speculative people in there, it never works. You don't get the same kind of snapshot of reality until there's reality.
Yeah.
And Anthea's right. I mean, as soon as it wasn't Biden, and you had a real choice, and you know, she's had a great 4 weeks. She's done wonderful at these rallies that she's had. And so people don't, you know, her favorable's bumped up 10 points and her unfavorable is dropped. And, you know, simply because two things have happened. They're the only two things she's needed to do. One, the enthusiasm gap has narrowed completely between Democrats and Republicans. There was a gigantic enthusiasm gap before.
Yeah.
And two, Democrats have come home. Trump was always getting 90-some percent of Republicans in polls, where Biden was getting 80, 81, 82. Mm-hmm. She's now getting as many Democrats as he's getting Republicans. And then it becomes a turnout fight.
That's
all this
game
is now, is a turnout fight. But you know, once somebody steps in, I mean, we always do polls and we say, and we make up somebody.
Right.
Candidate A is a lifelong, you know, city council member. You know, it doesn't work. I mean, it has to be a real person. And she's turned out to be a much better candidate than the marketing of her as vice president.
Yeah. We have a caller online, Stephanie from Wilmington, who's answering our questions today. Will this Harris poll bump last and what she needs to do to win? Stephanie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
To answer your question, I think Kamala Harris and the ticket can win as long as they stay both positive and respectful. And I saw a lot of that last night at the convention. I stayed up late, too, and watched the whole thing. And there were a lot of the speakers who were very positive. They didn't do name-calling like the Republicans often do. Some of the speakers did go down that path. So I think for Harris, she needs to stay positive and respectful, and she needs to come right out and say that in her campaign messaging. She needs to say, we're not going to go there. We're going to talk about real people and what matters and real issues. And we're not going to talk about people's character. We have a lot of things to be happy about. You know, let's be positive.
Yeah.
I think people will resonate with that. And a real quick second point for me, I wish she would stop talking about being a tough prosecutor, because I don't think that's what people really want to hear. At least I don't.
We'll leave it there, Stephanie.
That was a very fascinating call from Stephanie.
Thank you, Stephanie from Wilmington. I think Stephanie's point sort of pivots to my question for you all. And we'll start with Craig on this. Do people really know her? Because, you know, all we keep hearing is that she's a former prosecutor, right? And she was, the district attorney of San Francisco. She was attorney general. She was a senator. She's a lot of things. What needs to happen when we talk about knowing her? What have you all learned about her that maybe you didn't know? Because a lot of folks feel like they know very little other than her just being a former prosecutor. And Craig, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that there really is a race on right now to define who she is. She's been in public life for lots of years, but most Americans don't pay attention to this stuff, the way that political junkies do. And so there's a big gap between the understanding of who she is and what she stands for, as compared to Trump, who is, you know, wall to wall known and understood, whether you like him or you don't. I think what's going to happen here, we've already started seeing it, is tens of millions, ultimately probably hundreds of millions of dollars spent by the Republican side to define Harris as being far left, radically left, a communist, a socialist, et cetera. And the question becomes, how does the Harris campaign, how does Harris as a candidate define herself? And obviously this week, I mean, this is the best free publicity that any candidate has, is these convention days. And at least on day one, I think they're doing a good job of defining her as somebody who is in the center of American politics, who's not an extremist, and somebody who is focused on the future, not the past.
Let me ask about something that Stephanie mentioned around tone, because mm-hmm. I think you disagreed a little bit.
I totally disagreed.
So let's recap. So basically, our caller said she needs to keep the tone positive. And there has been this framing of her as the joyful warrior. You've seen that term mm-hmm. crop up. But Anthea Butler, you seem to think that she should take a different approach. So let's talk about what tone she should strike okay. moving forward.
Well, let me sort of thread a needle here. Mm-hmm. I think Stephanie wants to hear nice things and be Pollyanna because basically you're just sick of hearing Trump, which I agree with. I think, you know, the Republican campaign is very downer. It's very dark. It's very bleak. I think that Kamala Harris can keep the joy. I think Tim Walz will definitely keep the joy. Now, what I mean is that doesn't mean that other people can't go after them. And that's what should happen. The surrogates need to just completely hammer him. And what I'm seeing on social media and places like this, and maybe Stephanie is not there, is that I'm seeing them really prosecute this with Trump in commercials. You know, one of the things that I've been really interested in is Evangelicals for Harris, because I do religion, right? And they are just brutal in the clips that they are showing about him not wanting to feel sorry about anything, you know, basically feeling like he has never had to repent before God. I mean, every bad clip of Trump is coming out right now, and I love it because it's the inverse of when we go low, they go high. We go, you know, when they go low, we go high, right?
That's famous not Michelle
Obama. The Michelle Obama quote. She'll be on tonight, but basically, I'm like, no, that's not 2024. When they go low, we need to kneecap them. And that's basically what's happening right now. And I think that that's going to work. But it only works if she doesn't do it and she lets everybody else do it. And I think that's what's going to happen, because next month is not going to be good for Trump. And people are forgetting that he's got all these cases out there. And I think that the Democratic Party should go and kneecap him as much as possible. And it should be done by surrogates and not by the presidential candidate and the vice president candidate. It needs to be from everybody else.
Neil Oxman, you want to jump in on that? So there was the tone part, but also the point about whether or not she should emphasize her past as a prosecutor. She ran away from that a little bit in 2020. She's clearly leaned into it now.
You know, the three issues that are there on the table for Americans right now are the border, inflation, and crime. I mean, you know, it's even though crime overall has dropped, you know, there's hysteria about it. I mean, if you read the New York Post, if you read the Inquirer, you know, even though murders might be half of what they were last year, and certainly half of what they were just a few years ago when we had 500 murders, you know, one of my clients was Mike Nutter, who when he first ran, said if you couldn't get the murder rate under 250, you know, he wouldn't run again, and he did. And I was having lunch with him, and somebody said to him, "Well, congratulations, you did that." And he said, "There were 1,800 shootings in this city last year." He said, quote, "Can you imagine if these knuckleheads were better shots?" Mm. But crime is – you can't be labeled as soft on crime. You cannot be labeled –
in 2024.
Right. You cannot be labeled. Her tone – she's not going to change her tone. She can't out-Trump Trump. And by the way, this is what's happened. There's no fight for the middle anymore. It's mm-hmm. done. I mean, whatever 3%, 5%, both campaigns are micro-targeting like crazy those people. Trump ran an entire convention aimed at blue-collar men. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Our convention is a little broader. But what the deal is, she's not going to do something insane. The question is, every movie is about one thing. The bully fights the kid. The bully fights the kid. The question is there a moment at the debate where he's being a bully, and she, you know, it's David and Goliath, and she punches back, and the audience cheers because he's now so desperate that all he's doing, Ari, is he's trying to gin up turnout.
Yeah,
that's always it's the crazier he'll get, the he hopes that turnout's you know, he's going to get his base so riled up because, you know, she's the enemy and she's going to, I mean, a communist. It, just insane stuff that he's talking about that probably no presidential candidate since the fight between, you know, Jefferson and Adams, you know, 200 years
taking
ago.
Taking us back now.
Yes.
Yeah. And we want to hear from you. Will the Harris poll bump last? What does she need to do to win? Our number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. And Craig, I want to bring you into this conversation because you lead a group called Haley Voters for Harris. You know, you heard what Neil had to say. How is she doing on bringing some of those voters that were in the Republican camp over to Democrats thus far?
Yeah, Neil's a genius and is right about almost everything, but I think he's not right about this. There is still a fight for the middle, marginal groups matter. 158,000 Pennsylvania Republicans, registered Republicans, went out to vote for Nikki Haley after she was no longer a candidate in our primary. I'm one of them. You know, we weren't really voting for Nikki Haley because she was no longer a candidate. That wasn't going to happen. Trump was going to be the nominee. We were voting against Donald Trump. We were voting against the direction of the Republican Party. And where those 158,000 people decide to go in November really matters. Pennsylvania was decided in 2016 by 40,000 votes. It was decided in 2020 by 80,000 votes. So 158,000 Pennsylvanians is a lot. And I think that most of those people, the vast majority of those people, are not going to, quote unquote, return home to Trump because they decided they were done with him before they cast that for Haley. So the question is, what do they do? Do they write somebody in? Do they stay? Do they skip the line? Or do they go that last mile and vote for Harris? And that's what our group is designed to do, is to help them. To show them that there are a lot of Republicans like them who are going to vote for Harris, and to make the case that on the issues that Neil listed, inflation, the border, and crime, essentially issues that up until very recently the polls were showing favored Republicans, favored Trump, that on those issues, Harris is the better choice.
Mm. Craig, can I ask you a question? Actually, sorry to bust in, but I want to ask you a question based on a recent comment we just got from Larry, who said Harris's messaging should be about the insurrection on January 6th, hundreds of officers hurt, a disastrous day in our country's history. Reminding people of that should be a slam dunk for her. What do you think about that strategy? When you're talking about trying to win over this narrowing middle, should it be about reminding folks of what Trump did, or should it be about projecting forward?
Very much the latter. I can show you a mountain of real empirical research on this subject. The marginal Republicans and independents know what they think about January 6th, no matter how many times you repeat it, matter how kind of shrill you get about it. They don't change their mind about it. The issues that matter are the forward-looking issues, and Harris can win on those issues. That's what needs to be the focus.
Yeah. I want to bring in another caller. We have Ellen from Haddonfield, who's answering our questions of the day, which are, will the Harris poll bump last, and what does she need to do to win? Ellen, you're on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Oh, sure. My comment is this. Good afternoon. I do think that I love Tim Walz. Love him. I think he's great. He's funny, but he's just got to strike a tad more of a serious note. And I think the weird comments were funny and telling, but I think it's run its course a bit. Mm. And I do think a VP selection really does matter because look where we are now. So that's my comment.
Thank you so much, Ellen. I want to throw in Deborah's comment, who says she was not a big Harris fan, have been pleasantly surprised, and can truly say that I will be happy to cast my vote for her. Tim Walz was a good VP selection. I'm worried that there has been so much focus on the swing states that something may be missed at so-called blue states. And so I want to kind of pivot a little bit because I'm thinking about 2016. And I think we talked about there was less than 45,000 votes that swung towards former President Trump during that year. And so I want to talk about what's the difference between 2016 and 2020. And when I say that 45,000 votes, that was in Pennsylvania, but mm-hmm. he clearly won the Electoral College, ended up being president. So what's the big difference, do you think?
But didn't win the popular
vote. Didn't win the popular vote.
Republicans have not won the popular vote since George W. Bush. It's amazing. It's been, you know, a long time, since 36 years since Republicans won a popular vote.
But, Neil, my question is, what's the big difference between the party in 2016 when they did not, were not able to secure, you know, the presidency with a woman at the top of the ticket versus the party in 2024?
Well, there's a difference between Harris and Hillary Clinton. This is amazing. In 2014, the most popular woman in America and the most popular politician in America was Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. Look up the polls. It's unbelievable. And then when it became obvious she was going to be the nominee, for 2 years, Benghazi helped them, that they defined Hillary. So by the time the campaign started, her numbers had begun to crumble. I don't know. The election is 11 weeks from today. Mm. The Republicans have spent, whether it's the Trump campaign itself or independent expenditures, have spent a bucket load of money in the markets. Remember, you don't advertise nationally anymore. You spend less money nationally. Bill Clinton changed the way you ran for president. Before 1992, when you ran for president, you made 3 copies of the ads. You took them to ABC, NBC, and CBS in New York. And everybody in America saw your commercials. Clinton said to his team, "This makes no sense. I don't care if people in Massachusetts see my commercials. I'm not going to lose Massachusetts."
So Bill Clinton's why I can't get away from ads
right now.
While we're seeing them and YouTube Bill. Video.
Right. And I'm going to win. And I'm going to lose Wyoming. Yeah. And so, you know, the fact is, regardless of what one of the callers said about the blue states, you know, Philadelphia is getting more media than any other media market in the country. And they're spending money in about 10 states in the media markets in 10 states. And they spend a little money on CNN and, you know, CSNBC or MSNBC the way the Republicans spend it on Fox. But most of the money is spent on the local TV stations. And I don't think, to answer your question, I don't think they're going to be able to define her the way they were able to define
because there isn't as much time.
Right. There's isn't, number one. And two... Mm-hmm. Craig is right. I mean, there is a middle that you have to fight for. But right now, she's getting 93% of the Democrats. And Trump is getting 94% of the Republicans. So that middle is so small. Finite. As I said, micro-targeting. As each campaign is doing, you know, stuff to get those mm-hmm. people. But the majority of the money is just gigantic loud messages aimed at D's and R's.
I want to play one more clip before we go to break, and I'll sort of use this to tee up a question for after the break. This is Dylan from Pittsburgh talking about Hillary Clinton's campaign in 2016 and how her run compares to Kamala Harris. Let's hear Dylan's thoughts.
Hillary Clinton definitely got snared with being a woman and all that stuff. I think a lot of people focused on that. And I think like she's now doing the opportunity where she is going to be the party leader and like be the female, but like be the joyous female instead of the one that is like the seemingly like angry one. And, you know, I think she's going to be the perfect person that we can have on the ticket.
So as we come back from break, I'd love to get all of your thoughts on the gender dynamics in this race. How do they compare to 2016? And is she leaning into that or is she leaning away from that in her campaign so far? And perhaps how should she lean moving forward? Because, of course, she does have a chance to be the first woman president. And I got to say, I haven't heard a lot of people talking about that. At least it feels like to me, not as much.
Except the Republicans calling her a DEI candidate. Yes,
so let's talk about that on the other side of this break. You're listening to Studio 2. Our big question today, can Harris maintain her poll bump? What does she need to do to win? We've been hearing from you, and we will hear from more of you after this break. Give us a call, 888-477-9499.
The candidates for November are set.
I know Donald Trump's tight.
Between now and Election Day.
We are not going back.
A campaign season unfolding faster.
Kamala Harris is not getting a promotion.
Than any in recent history.
Make America great again.
Follow it all with new episodes every weekday on the NPR Politics Podcast.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, and we are talking about the Harris-Walz campaign, the DNC, and do you think the Harris momentum will continue? Has it peaked? What does she need to do to win? Give us a call, 888-477-9499, or email studio2@whyy.org.
And I want to reintroduce our guests. We have Anthea Butler, the Geraldine R. Siegel Professor in American Thought at the University of Pennsylvania, and a contributing writer at MSNBC Online. We have Neil Oxman, Democratic campaign strategist based here in Philadelphia, both in our studio. And we have Craig Snyder, director of Haley Voters for Harris, on the line. Welcome back to Studio 2.
So I teed this up before the break. Anthea Butler, what should Harris say or not say about the potential of being the first woman president? And how does this moment compare to 2016?
Let me start with the last part first about how this moment compares to 2016, because there is one very big thing that wasn't in play at 2016. Roe was in place in 2016. Mm-hmm. It is not in place in 2024. And that is crucial, because now this is a woman's election and she can be as joyful as she wants to be. But there are a multitude of angry women who are tired of Republicans telling them what to do with their bodies. And these Republicans don't even understand how their body parts work. OK, they don't even know where a uterus is. Mm-hmm. So the issue for her is, how do you talk about that? But to, again, let the surrogates speak. One of the most powerful parts of last night's Democratic convention was when everybody got up and started talking about their miscarriages, how they lost children,
yes.
the 12-year-old rape case. That was just horrific. That was horrible. And, it was so horrible that Fox didn't even play it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you just think about that. They don't want you to hear what this really means, that young girls who get raped will have to have these babies from their rapists because they won't be able to get an abortion. So for, Vice President Harris' part, she can allude to this and she can talk about it, but she's going to have to be explicit, because all they got to do is run the commercials. All they have to do is flood the airwaves. They just continue to talk about this and to talk about this, and they have been very effective in doing that. So I think that's the first thing. Does she need to talk about being the president? She's already the vice president. If something had happened to Biden, she would be president, period. End of story. So this is a moot point now. You don't have to say, I'm breaking the glass ceiling like Hillary did. None of that stuff.
Interesting.
You are already a person in power. And to the DEI point, which mm-hmm. this is really important, we've already had a black president. This mm-hmm. DEI canard is just another word so that you don't get to say the word that you don't want to use.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So what, my bet is, personally, and I will say this on radio, I cannot wait, because Trump is going to break and say something he shouldn't say. Because he's losing it.
You don't think he's done that already?
Well, no. I mean, the big word. Okay, yeah, we all know what that word is.
He won't use
it. He won't. They're going to have to drug him so he doesn't use this word.
He's
but he might say the B word. He might say that, because mm-hmm. he already has. We already got him on tape saying that. So basically what I think is that this is making him crumble, because they don't understand how to get her. They can't get her, because if they come after her about her, her Indian heritage, some of their people have already been talking about J.D. Vance's wife, who is probably sitting up there at home going like, what have I signed myself up for? Because they are criticizing somebody who is of the same ethnicity, that mm-hmm. I am. Right. So I think that this is going to be a really sticky spot for the Republicans. And as you say, you had some great historical points about this. But Hillary had years of negatives. That, from 14 to 16 was
they
a real high
part.
They destroyed her, because they had so many things to go back on.
And it wouldn't have happened had she, if she had not been a candidate.
She would
have been. But just to your point that there is no line. That's mm-hmm. the one thing. There might be a line. There is no line, and he's going to go over the line because A, it is who he is, and B, they have one strategy. The strategy is, we have to have a massive turnout. We have to, we have to make our base so angry, and I don't, interestingly, their enthusiasm numbers have dropped just a couple of points. Well, that's all you need. As Craig said, mm-hmm. in Pennsylvania, when it's 81,000 votes and other states it's 10,000 votes, it's really interesting that the enthusiasm gap is dropped. Now, I think, and David Axelrod, by the way, says one thing, which you guys should pay attention to. He says we need 5-point leads in every state to make sure we win. Mm-hmm. And that's because our voters are least likely to vote. Younger voters, people of color, you know.
Outside of the margin of error.
Right. But mostly younger, because Dave Davies has heard me say this forever. The single biggest predictor of voting is age. It's not income and education. It's age.
Yeah.
And, you know, they have older voters.
Yeah. I want to bring in a caller. We have David from Fairmount, who is answering our question for the day, which is, will this Harris poll bump last, and what does she need to do to win? David, you are on Studio 2. What's your comment?
Well, I agree with the earlier callers that the Democratic Party should not resort to name-calling. That normalizes what they do, and I'm glad they're not doing it. However, they are leaving so much on the table, and I'm outraged. I have not seen a single advertisement reminding us, or the Access Hollywood tape, not one advertisement of his claiming on stage to denigrating American POWs when he said, I only like people who don't get captured. I haven't seen anything reminding us about how he said there are good people among white supremacists, or that he trusts Vladimir Putin more than American intelligence agencies. All of those things were on videotape, but I have not seen any of that. Why are they leaving so much white food just hanging there?
David, thank you. That is really on the money, I think, because a lot of people, especially within the base, I think feel like, why are you ignoring Trump's past? Well, Trump and his surrogates really go hard after Harris. Mm-hmm. Can I direct that to Craig Snyder? Because I feel like a lot of the voters that you represent, and you are one of these voters, I think part of the reason they aren't pursuing that strategy is because it might alienate some voters in the center. But I might be wrong. I mean, Craig Snyder, what do you think?
No, I think you're right. That's the strategic choice. Again, there's really a lot of data about this that suggests that there are soft Republicans, not only the Haley voters, and Republican leaning independents, and they know what they think about Trump. They know they know you know his character flaws and his infractions of various kinds. It's sort of baked in for them. And, you know, you can dwell on it, and it doesn't change the voting numbers is sort of the point. Mm. What does change the voting numbers is talking about the future. And you know, he's now the old guy in the race. I mean, one thing that Nikki Haley got right in her primary campaign was she said the first party that gets rid of its 80-year-old is going to win. And you know, we now know which party that is. Yeah, she did. And she, you know, I think she was right. At least there's the possibility for that. I mean, Trump is now the old guy in the race. He's the guy talking about the past. Both his the imagined past of his administration and the imagined past of some kind of American glory that he wants to restore. And Harris and Walz are, you know, joyfully, as we keep saying, talking about a better future. Mm. I think that's where the deciding voters are going to be.
Yeah, and I want to read a couple comments. Brian says, yes, and she needs to continue sharing her positive message and vision for this country. Just like Hillary Clinton, Kamala Harris is exceedingly more qualified than Trump. It's not even close. Maurice says, announce specific policies that she hopes to enact. Her team has yet to be explicit about why the momentum should continue. The Donald Trump is a bad guy message isn't sustainable enough to counter an established ideology.
To answer the caller's question.
Yes.
Generally, the rule of thumb is the campaign itself. Remember, there's as much money spent from independent
groups
than there are, you know, because it's a lot easier for them. Somebody can write $1 million check to them. You can only write essentially a $3,100 check to a political campaign, a federal race. There are groups like Vote Vets who will –
They will more narrowly target
right.
that
I mean,
message.
And talking about it, you know, McCain, what about the fact that he said that the Presidential Medal of Freedom he gave to somebody is more important than the Medal of Honor? I mean, he's gonna get killed by these independent groups spending tons of money.
And that is my question here because I want to get this in. Talking about the surrogates and Anthea, you sort of talked about this, what the role of the surrogate should be, what her messaging should be, and then how to use President Joe Biden. I mean, he joked yesterday that he would be the best volunteer for the Harris-Waltz campaign. Because I want to talk about those three things. What are those roles of those three? What is the campaign's role and her role, right, as one? What is the surrogate's role? And then what is the role of the president?
Let me start with the president first. I mean, I think you could, if you listen to his speech last night, he is ready to go. And he is ready to take on Trump. I mean, I think the biggest thing that I see him standing in the place of is fighting for democracy. He will be the one that brings up January 6th. He will be the one to remind everybody that this is a fight for the soul of America, right? That is his phrase. He is going to own it. He's also going to be the one who talks about veterans a lot because he's thinking about his son, Beau. Right.
Yes.
And so that's going to become a real sticking point. So I think that's the first thing is that he will be an effective surrogate and he is going to just, you know, basically let the chopper spray because he doesn't have to hold back anymore. And this is about his legacy, too. So he has to make sure that he shores her up in the best way possible. That's number one. For the campaign wants to continue the feel good. We are granting these crowds. We want to continue. And I think the moment that we're going to see what really happens is the debate on the 10th because the debate will tell everything. And if Trump tries to stalk her on the stage like he did with Clinton, I think it's going to be another thing coming. I think he's going to be very scared of her, quite frankly, because, you know, this gets back to the other thing that the person said about, you know, should we talk about his crimes and everything else? 34 felonies. Come on now. I mean, you know,
and you heard Hillary Clinton say
and
that.
She said it and they said, lock him up. We're going to hear lock him up until November. Okay. Because people are tired and he chanted that the whole time for her and WikiLeaks and all of this other mess. You can just destroy this man on his own record very clearly. And the campaign, all they have to do is put out what they're going to do policy wise and they'll be better.
And so my follow up is the surrogates, because we're hearing from, we heard from Hillary Clinton yesterday, President Biden spoke and made attacks. And now today we'll hear from the Obamas. We'll hear from many other folks. What must they do?
The Biden campaign, the Harris campaign will be very good about sending people like that to the right places. You know, Biden will go to Lackawanna, Luzerne County in Pennsylvania, where he's from. And you know, because he's not going to Wyoming. You know, Obama will go and try to get, you know, an African American turned out among younger people. I mean, you know, they'll say the right things. They will because there's less of a standard for them than it is for her. And she's doing the right thing in terms of her tone.
Before we go, I want to talk about potential stumbling blocks, because we're talking about all this momentum, but what could blunt it? And here's an email from Catherine in Allentown who says, Harris has to win over all of us who are sickened by almost 11 months of war in Gaza, paid for, enabled by the Biden administration. Harris-Waltz need to meet with, listen, and respond to the cries for permanent ceasefire and an offensive arms cutoff to Israel. So when we look, because you said, Neil, it's going to be about turnout. It's going to be about enthusiasm. What are the issues that could blunt that, and what must Harris do to make sure that does not happen?
That's going to hurt in Michigan, where they're, you know, I mean, you're caught between a rock and a hard place. But look, in the history of modern presidential campaigns, the greatest strategic mistake I have seen is Donald Trump agreeing to a first debate. Because if there had not been a first debate, Joe Biden would be the nominee and Trump would be winning in a landslide, because the first debate wouldn't happen to September to be too late. Things could happen in a debate and she could, you know, she could make a mistake in a debate. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, think about 11 weeks from now. If this is a movie, what's happened in the last 5 weeks, let alone 11 weeks. Yeah. It's a movie, and some Hollywood executive would say it's too far-fetched. Yeah. I mean, it's silly.
Before we go, can I just get Craig Snyder on that question of what could trip up Harris, and what must she do to avoid tripping on that potential stumbling block?
Well, I think at some point that she's going to have to have a more kind of upfront explanation of why she's running on a lot of positions that are different than she ran on in 2019. It's not crucial to sort of the average voter, but again, when we're talking about margins, I think that's one thing. The second thing is, you know, the world is not waiting for our election. I mean, a substantial expansion of the war in the Middle East involving Iran, things that could happen between Ukraine and Russia. There are
real life.
Stuff is happening.
Real life, exactly.
And so as we wrap up, because, you know, 76 days until the election, if you were to give Harris one piece of advice going forward for the next 76, what would that be?
Quick piece of advice.
Quick piece. One thing.
Oh, my gosh. Quick piece of advice is be clear about what you want to say about Israel, Gaza, and wear your chucks.
Mm. Yeah, wear your chucks. Okay, Neil.
Hillary Clinton lectured people in 2016, and that's why blue-collar men left her. Don't lecture. Keep the same tone you're doing now, which is inclusive. Mm. That would be my advice.
And Craig, what would be your one?
Keep focused on the future, not the past, and hope, not fear.
There you go. And so we will all be watching over the next, how many days was it? 76 days?
76.
That's a
there's
good
a
number
countdown.
Here in Philadelphia.
There's a counter, okay?
76 days. Here we are in Philadelphia talking about the number 76. And of course, Philadelphia will be the focus for much of the campaign moving forward. And we look forward to more conversations about this. But let me thank our guests, Anthea Butler, Geraldine R. Siegel, professor in American Social Thought at the University of Pennsylvania and contributing writer at MSNBC Online. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you.
Neil Oxman, Democratic campaign strategist from Philadelphia. Thank you, Neil, as always.
Thank you, guys.
And Craig Snyder, director of Haley Voters for Harris. Craig, we really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
And thanks to all our callers and all the folks who emailed
Great
and
calls.
Commented on social. We really appreciate you. And that, friends, is the end of today's edition of Studio 2. The show is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Adam Staniszewski is our engineer for today. Kevin McCrory is our executive producer. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Thanks so much for joining us. We will talk with you tomorrow.